The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
The Midweek Drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Well, I've just had a three-hour drive from Lincoln to Middlesbrough via Scarborough, and certainly I was delighted to ensure that obviously the car was sorted out, everything else was done and dusted, because it was a fun drive and an enjoyable drive. But certainly if I was doing it over the next few days, maybe I might be a wee bit concerned about, obviously, traffic, travel, etc., especially if you actually haven't got some support for your vehicle. So to actually talk us through why you should seriously consider not only the AA, but also what three words, we're delighted to welcome from the AA, fabulous soul who's basically Gareth Jones. Gareth, how are you?
Yeah, hi, Alex. Not too bad. Thanks. Are you?
Yeah, okay. I mean, honestly, I obviously treasure my AA membership. I've been with you for, I think, a little over 30-odd years now. So one or two minor sort of hiccups, as in all relationships, you have these kind of things. But, you know, still worthwhile. The What Three Words app, I have downloaded it, but never, thankfully, touch wood, had to use it. But why is it so important?
So I don't know if you've ever broken down, Alex, and tried to describe to your breakdown service where you are. It's very difficult. I mean, I remember breaking down several years ago and going, I'm somewhere between these two junctions on a motorway, and that could be miles. So What Three Words does, it splits the country up into 3 meter square blocks and assigns each one a selection of three words that are unique to that particular block. So it makes it really easy for your recovery service or the emergency services to find you. So it's recommended that people download it so they can actually get the recovery service to them a lot quicker.
Yeah. Also, of course, it must be noted that you sometimes are in a state of stress when you've broken down. I mean, it is one of those areas where, you know, you don't quite know what's happening. There are all sorts of other challenges within that. And maybe the easier things you've actually got to provide something, it can hopefully alleviate some of that additional stress.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it, that you break down, you don't actually know what's necessarily up with your vehicle at the time, and then you're trying to work out exactly where you are. And if you're in somewhere that you're not familiar with, it's very difficult to sort of go, there's a car park over there, or I'm about 2 miles from this particular location. Obviously, 3 square meters is so small that actually it narrows it down really, really well, and means that whoever you're phoning, be it the emergency services or the breakdown services, can actually get to you a lot quicker. They know exactly where you are. They're not sort of second guessing and going, oh, okay, well, you're somewhere within this vicinity.
We're seeing information that suggests this could be the biggest getaway weekend since before the pandemic. That's a substantial number of cars on the road, Gareth. Do you think we're doing all we can to ensure that our vehicles are in a suitable and roadworthy manner?
Well, I don't know about you, Alex, but it's not one of the things I generally used to check before I started at the AA. You go on a long journey, sometimes you sort of go, okay, I need to check a couple of things out, but it's about getting your car fit for the road and making sure that you've got all the little things checked so that you don't cause yourself stress when you're out on the road. So check things like your oil, your coolant, the windscreen wash levels. Also check that your tyres are inflated to the correct levels, because if you're going away for the weekend, you're liable to be carrying more weight in your car than what you do for your normal weekly or daily commute. So check that your tyres are to the correct levels. Also check the spare if your car's got one, because not all vehicles are supplied with a spare tyre at the moment as well. Other things to check, obviously, make sure you've got enough fuel or electrical charge in your car if you've got an EV. And also know where on your route you can stop to fill up, because if you do run out of fuel and you do cause the obstruction on the road, you could be liable to be issued with a fixed penalty notice by the police for causing an obstruction of something that you could have prevented. So be aware of that one.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Just out of interest, in terms of electric vehicles, does a similar kind of charge occur if you actually run out of charge in terms of your journey?
Yeah, it does. So if you're causing an obstruction and you could have prevented it. So, for example, if you break down, or if you run out of fuel, rather, on a road and you're the one that's causing the tailback, and it could have been prevented because you could have noted that you were running out of charge or running out of fuel. I mean, how many times do you play Russian roulette with the red light on the fuel gauge? You go, just going to get a few more miles out of that one. This is what happens, and people end up breaking down, causing massive tailbacks, and then when the police find out, some forces are issuing fixed penalty notices because it could have been prevented all along.
I must admit, that's one of those things that I can actually virtue signal about, say that I always ensure that it's a full tank when we're certainly doing reasonably long journeys, and I would say that anything over 100 miles is a reasonably long journey. 18.5 million of us looking to take to the roads this Easter weekend. I mean, clearly potentially an awful lot of work for the AA. Are you guys ready for it? Are you still the fourth emergency service?
We like to think that we are, and we are ready, that we have got plenty of patrols, excuse me, out on the roads. But obviously, the extra volume of traffic does increase response time. So anything you can do to help out, so making sure that your car is checked before you travel. And also, as we mentioned before, downloading What Three Words, so that if you do happen to need us, then we can get to you as quickly as possible. But just remember and have a little bit of patience with us, the fact that we are going to be stuck in the same queues that everybody else is. So if there's a lot of traffic on the road, our response times are going to be affected.
Yeah, always a worthwhile noting. Although I have to say, I don't intend to actually travel. I made the decision a few years ago that usually bank holidays, I tend to stay static, really. Without
wise decision.
Well, it's just one of those things. Hence the reason I did the journey via Scarborough earlier today. Anyway, further details, is it whatthreewords.com for the What Three Words app?
Yes, you can find that on there. And if you want any further information about safe driving and things you can do to help out, getting your car prepared, then if you head over to the AA.com, you'll find lots of useful information there as well.
Yes. And any chance of the AA ever actually resuming the day when they used to salute us as we passed by? I mean, way before your time, but I just thought, you know, it might be quite nice sometimes if that was
I'll suggest it as an idea.
Yeah, there you go. Gareth Jones from the Automobile Association, the AA, of course, huge thanks, and have a great holiday.
Thank you very much.
Now, if you're thinking about going to higher education or indeed furthering your studies in some way, shape or form over the next few months, you might well think that a student loan is for you. Well, good. But having said that, bear in mind that there are certain delays and elements that come with that whole system. And we're delighted to actually welcome from the student loan company, Jonathan Newby, to speak to us today. How are you, Jonathan?
Thank you, Alex. I'm great. And thank you for having us on the show today.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. Of course, there is that notion about why should we go off to education in the first place, but that's another debate for another time. But in terms of obviously the student loan, which is essential to so many students to enable them to actually benefit from their educational journeys, talk to us about this particular finding, which suggests that a lot of people are thinking about putting off applying for student finance for quite a time, really.
Yes, of course. Students should be applying if they're thinking about going to university or college from September, so for 24-25. Students should be applying for student finance now. But our research has shown that around 48% of students are planning to leave it until later in the year. And just to put a bit of context behind that, we have around 2 million people who are applying for student finance every year. And it can take the student loans company many weeks to carefully assess each one of them. However, we do guarantee that everybody who puts their application in by the 17th of May will have their funding in place for the start of term. So our research, going back to that, does show that half of students are going to leave it late, often because they think they have to wait to apply or because they don't realise just how easy it is for them to submit their applications.
And allowing for the fact that the application process can take up to 2 months to actually complete, between 6 and 8 weeks, clearly that 17th of May cut-off point is fairly critical, I would have thought, Jonathan.
Yes, completely. So every person who does apply is an individual with different circumstances. Everybody is entitled to something different. So whether people are applying for tuition fee loans, maintenance loans, disabled students allowance, or any of our other products, we do have to assess everybody individually. And those late applications can mean that there isn't time for the student loans company to be able to assess them and make sure that funding is in place for every student before their courses start. So our 17th of May guarantee means that students can have peace of mind that their funding will be there for them at the start of their term.
Which is obviously critical. Now, dinosaurs such as myself actually applied in the days where we used to have a grant from the local authority and we had to get that sorted out back in the 80s and so on. Is the process complex? Is it fairly straightforward? I mean, 6 to 8 weeks sounds an awful lot of time. Presumably it doesn't take 6 to 8 weeks to actually do the application.
No. Completely does not take that long to submit the application. For the majority of people, they'll be able to apply online. So 99.9% of students will be able to submit their entire application quite easily online. The application takes around 30 minutes for most to process. It's very straightforward. We do... If the student is having their parents or their partner or another sponsor be part of the process, if they're using their household income, They have a slightly separate application process, and they need to have their financial details to hand to be able to submit and support that student's application with them.
And again, interesting, you actually raised that because there's more advice that you can find presumably by going to gov.uk/student finance.
Yes, all of our information from applying for student finance right through to the repayment terms and conditions can be found on that website that you've just highlighted there. So that's gov.uk/student finance. What we are encouraging students to do is get their applications in now, visit that website now. And we just want to remind everybody that they don't need to have your university place confirmed. You don't need to wait for clearing week to be able to submit your application. Get your application in now. It takes 4 to 6 weeks, as you've mentioned, to be able to process those. And you can apply safe in the knowledge that you can change any of those details if you change your course, even if you want to withdraw your application. But the key message is to get your application in early and get that in now.
Well, that was certainly one of the things I wanted to actually raise, that if students do have kind of range of possible options when it comes around to results day, etc. We know that clearing is still a way forward. Does that impact on their student loan? And you've just basically said no, all's well with that.
No, definitely. Students can put their preferred university or destination down at the moment. And if that does change by the time that clearing week comes, or by the time that they go to a university or college in September or beyond, they can make those details and change that quite easily online in their application. It's the main bulk of the application we want them to submit first to be able to get that processed and make sure that they've got funding in place for when they start their course.
Takeaway messages: clearly get your application in before the 17th of May this year if you are looking to head off to higher education in the summer. What about students who possibly were intending to take a gap year or might want to do that? Is the same sort of line applicable to them in terms of, well, maybe I should delay if I might not be starting my university course until, for instance, 2025?
Yeah, so 2025 applications won't be open until March next year. So if any student is planning to take a gap year for this year, they don't really need to do anything at this moment in time. However, if a student is pretty certain that they're going to be starting studying at 24, 25, we do say, as you've mentioned, the May 17th deadline is what they should be aiming for to get their application to SLC.
Okay, and a reminder finally, Jonathan, about the online address to go to find out details for the student loan company.
And that is www.gov.uk/student finance for all of that information that we've just ran through today.
Excellent. Jonathan Newby from the ALS-SLC. Many thanks indeed. Take care there.
Thank you, Alex.
Washing. When to do it? How often to do it? How frequently should you do it? How do you actually square the washing demands with respect to saving the planet, etc.? Well, maybe, just maybe, the next piece will actually solve all of those challenges, because we're delighted to welcome the ace presenter of The Gadget Show and indeed technology journalist extraordinaire, Georgie Barrett. How are you, Georgie?
I'm very well, thank you.
Great. Well, great to connect with a good self. Obviously, I'm wearing clean clothes for this particular interview. I'm sure you always do, as a matter of course. But in terms of that, what is this obsession that we're suddenly generating about how often to wash? And are we actually becoming a nation of overwashers?
Yes, I feel like I bring good news to people, which is the fact that no one likes doing loads and loads of washing, do they? It's a little bit chorey. Well, I mean, maybe some people do, but on the whole, it's a bit chorey. So I'm here to tell you that we don't need to be washing our clothes nearly as much as what we're doing. So this is some new research conducted by AEG, and they find that Brits waste, wait for it, £440 million per year on overwashing their clothes. And that stat's worked out because we're damaging our clothes through overwashing them, but we're also spending a lot of money on electricity and water for overwashing them. So they're basically on a campaign to try and get people to stop washing their clothes, which is a sort of bizarre concept, because I think we're all programmed to be clean freaks and think that, you know, we need to be sticking a wash on every 2 minutes that shows that we're being productive and doing our chores correctly. But actually, there's loads and loads of times that we don't need to be doing a full wash on our clothes. And they've come up with this great little formula, which you can check out online. But you basically, you do a fresh test on an item. So instead of just automatically checking it into the washing basket after you've worn it, you have a little look at it, you work out like how dirty it is, whether it needs a spot clean. And then there's alternatives instead of sticking it just in your washing machine every single time. And if you do that, then we can cut back on washing, which is not only better for the environment, but it's also better for your wallet, and better for your actual garments of clothes as well, because they don't get so misshapen from being, you know, put through the wash a million times a week. So yes, that's what I'm here to tell you, which is a slightly unusual message, I know, but I have to say I'm fully embracing it, because I definitely fall into the camp of somebody who's not so keen on washing. So actually being told that I don't need to be washing my clothes as much is it's quite liberating, in all honesty.
I still sing the praises of the humble laundrette, actually, but that's another line entirely. But in well, terms
there you go,
of
then that's quite a lot of effort for you, then. You probably don't always want to be walking all the way down to the laundrette when there's other ways of cleaning your clothes.
That is true, particularly as they're becoming almost an endangered species these days. So in terms of the notion of not washing, I mean, does this almost take us back to the days where perhaps rather than going to the laundrette or using our own particular devices, we'd go down to the river and wash the clothes there and then sort of take the thing out from that point of view? Is it a case of we're going retro to go forward?
Well, I love that notion, washing your clothes in the river. Now, I'm not suggesting that that is the way to get your clean clothes. However, there are ways of doing it whereby you can maybe just hang your clothes out so that it airs it, which can get rid of a lot of the smells. Like a lot of people put their clothes in the wash because they've cooked with their clothes and they think that that smell is going to really stay in them unless they wash them. But as a matter of fact, you could just hang your clothes out and air them for a little bit, and that will, that smell will get rid. You can also spot clean your clothes. So if you have actually got a stain on it, you can just use a little bit of detergent, and it will get rid of that stain without having to put the whole thing through the wash. And also it's just about reframing our habits. So a lot of people, 69% of the people that we surveyed found that they sometimes would wash clothes when they haven't even worn them, which sounds crazy. But if I give you the example of maybe when you come back from holiday and you put your whole suitcase through the wash because you don't, you know, you think it's all been in amongst the dirty stuff, and you think, oh, it's just easier to do that. Or maybe if you're changing seasons and you haven't worn something for a little while, so you think, oh, well, maybe I'll give it a little wash before I go out and wear it again. It's about reframing those moments and thinking, actually, that's really, there's no need to be doing that. Mm. And then sometimes, you know, again, we just get in the habit that, like, if we're going out and about and you've worn it once, or you've maybe cooked with it or something like that, you just automatically put it in the washing pile, but you really don't need to. You could easily get another wear out of them, or two or three even. So it's just about sort of reframing how sort of easily we basically put stuff through the wash when we don't always have to.
And in terms of obviously this formula that has been developed for clothing care, including when to wash, how often to wash, and also how technology can actually help us wash, how close do you think we are to actually getting AI to actually do all the washing for us, basically?
Well, AI, I believe, is going to take over absolutely everything. Mm. When it does the washing, I'm not quite sure. We'd have to get some robots involved in that as well, wouldn't we? It wouldn't just have to be AI scanning your clothes for you. But yes, come back to me in 50 years' time and I'll be doing another round of these.
Well,
telling
exactly.
You that you don't even need to lift a finger anymore and robots and AI are going to do all the washing for you.
Georgian longevity, a whole new world to actually sort of explore from that point of view. Okay, for this AEG report and the kind of things we were talking about, where would you point people, Georgie?
So if you head to the AEG website and then just type into it, don't wash your clothes, you'll come up with that sort of formula. So you can just start reframing how often you need to put stuff through the wash.
Well, I mean, what can I say? Don't wash your clothes. A mandate from Georgie Barrett. Clearly, it's the way forward. Georgie Barrett, technology expert extraordinaire. Huge thanks. And keep on washing. Or not.
Thank you. Or not.
Morning, Miss Cartwright.
Morning, Miss Cartwright. Miss Baines, Mrs. Williams, this is Miss Miles. These ladies will show you the ropes.
Good afternoon, ladies.
You must be the new jeune fille.
Some help I can use during this season.
Who's that?
Magda, one of them refos.
Refugees.
migrants.
This came for you.
Oh, Dad will have to sign this. Dad, I need you to sign this form.
Look, I've told you before, no daughter of mine is going to university.
We'll think of something.
Oh, it was all over me. They only want one thing. All of them.
I mean, what do you expect? They're going to kiss your hand and throw their coats over drains?
Sorry,
they always knew that I'd lose you someday.
Oh, no, you'll never lose me. I'll stay with you always.
I hope so. But now, something more important. Your dad's dinner.
Rudy needs assistance.
I wish to find a girlfriend. Mm. I want an Australian girl.
An Australian?
Yes, some of them are very beautiful.
The cultivated ones have gone away.
Magda, there is someone.
She's rough. She's no style. Perfect.
Who's going to be at Magda's party? Are you meeting someone?
No, I don't know anyone. I think they'll all be Continentals.
Do you speak English?
Of course. And Hungarian and German. And some French and Russian. A drink?
Look, Mum. Magda gave me this. And her husband made us a lovely lunch.
You made the lunch?
European men like to cook.
Oh, I like to drink. I'm off to the pub. See you in a couple of hours.
Magnificent!
You want to be careful. I don't want to see you get hurt.
Yeah! You're a clever girl. It's the most wonderful thing in all creation, you know?
Perhaps you would be a businesswoman. There are worse things. She's got no
talent in that. Oh, I should have gone to mass this morning. Too late now.
I'm sure God will understand.
Well, here we are once again for another midweek drive morning edition movie review. But strangely, no sign of Natasha Wanton, no sign of Richard Fitzwilliams. Hopefully they'll drop in. Otherwise, it'll just be left to the fine duo of Anna and Fia to effectively talk us through their thoughts on Richard's recommendations for his movies this time. Both not necessarily current. Perhaps it's because he doesn't want to go and see Kong versus Godzilla. Still, a few years ago, shall we say, both available on Netflix, one of which is, of course, The Occupant, and the other one, which we will launch with in terms of our discussions, is indeed a movie that's made by Bruce Beresford. Bruce Beresford, who is a director who actually had his visa to work in America removed by no less a person than President Donald Trump. Why was this the case? Well, basically because he'd actually dared to attend a film festival in Iran, and as somebody who effectively went to Iran, he was basically told he couldn't actually have any presence in America at all, so therefore he had to effectively have his visa removed. I'm not sure whether it's been returned since by Joe Biden, or whether he's just having to continue to work in Australia or any other part of the world, including Canada. Anyway, enough of such general randomness and such like. I think the team are gradually beginning to assemble, even in a vehicle, no less, in the case of Sarah Huntley. Welcome, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Easter. I'm sorry. Let me know if the car background's too much because I can't turn it to mute on my phone. I'm sorry. Technology's gone. Is it too bad, Alexis?
It's fine. It's perfectly okay. It keeps the liveness going, much as Fia van den Bogert will do in, of course, the Netherlands. How are you, Fia?
I am very well. I mean, it's Easter, so yeah.
Exactly. The season of Easter continues ever onwards. The Lord is risen. We are saved. Thank the Lord. Anna Koshkonel, of course, is back with us as well. How are you, Anna?
I am fine. Taking a break from work to be with you and enjoying the movies.
With, of course, the caveat that in the case of Romania, being, of course, of the Russian Orthodox faith or the Orthodox faith, you don't celebrate Easter until basically May time. Is that right?
Yes, we have about a month and a week in Easter here.
So there we are, we're all heading here through that. Well, as we said, we presume that Richard wasn't actually stuck watching Kong versus Godzilla, which I know he's keenly looking to actually work to. Maybe he was actually involved with all of the trolls that were saying all sorts of things, horrid things about King Charles and the royals as they actually attend service in the southern parts of the world, obviously without Princess Catherine, but still, life continues. Enough royal news, Richard. I've just been saying Bruce Beresford, he had his visa to work in America removed by President Trump because he dared to visit a film festival in Iran, basically. So as a visitor of Iran, he wasn't allowed to do that. I've already given my scores off the record to Fia and Anna, so they know exactly what I think about these two movies. Sadly, once again, you've chosen both movies which have got vomiting in. In the case of, obviously, the former, we've got the child who actually vomits in the department store. And then in the case of the latter, we've got the person who is forcibly forced to vomit after being forced to run up the hill. So not a good look for me, and that's why they've lost points already. Anyway, Richard, over to you. Do you want to go Ladies in Black first?
If you'd like, Alex. I mean, I think that was one of the most extraordinary introductions that even you could have devised about the issue of throwing up. This can happen, incidentally, and when one sees a bad movie, sometimes that's precisely what you feel about doing. But when it comes to Ladies in Black, I thought that I was on totally safe territory, indeed, territory so safe that it almost, well, I mean, one has to say this, you have a cornucopia of cliches, but anyone who goes to see this movie, and one must review it with the idea of who's likely to watch it, is likely, I think, to be entertained by it. It's, after all, hardly intellectually stimulating, even though some of the characters in it certainly get their kicks.
Richard, when Julia Ormond's accent is entertaining in itself, really. The way she can actually switch from her natural American to a wonderful East European person from an emigre from Hungary is just fantastic.
You know, I have to say that with Julia Ormond, I got quite a shock because we go back together to First Night with Sean Connery, and she played Guinevere to his Lancelot. It was quite extraordinary, really.
Richard, don't forget Nicholas Hammond is in there. Nicholas Hammond from The Sound of Music and Spider-Man.
What did he play in The Sound of Music, Alex?
He was one of the children. He was one of the Von Trapp children, basically.
I thought it might be. I thought that was a possible. But anyway, regarding Ladies in Black, Lisa, played by Anguri Rice, is hired as a new assistant at Goods Department Store in Sydney in 1959. It's at Christmas time, and she befriends some of the other assistants. There's Faye, played by Rachel Taylor, who's very wary of immigrants. There's Patty, whose husband is pretty indifferent to her. And of course, there is Alex, who's already introduced you to Magda, who is played by Julia Ormond, an immigrant, a new Australian, as they're called, from Slovenia. Now, Patty, well, she's a rather strange character because, well, an unfortunate character, should I say, because she gets a pink nightdress to get her husband's attention. Well, he does attend, but subsequently he disappears. He's so frightened. This gives you an idea of male characters, not only in this movie, but in large numbers of other movies. You see that clearly that there's the feminist aspect to this. I often wonder, though, whether it's necessary to paint the male characters as quite such appalling or inadequate or brutal creatures.
Richard, he was just concerned about that night. He was very worried about that night, and it wasn't until he actually realised that that night wasn't an issue that he actually managed to return. It happens.
Yes, a terrified creature. Yes, yes, absolutely. Indeed, he does. And Magda asks Lisa and Faye, because Faye, incidentally, is already earmarked for good things because she's, well, good-looking, and I did notice this when she first appeared. This is not a subtle movie, by the way. Ask them both to a New Year's Eve party, and Faye is introduced to Rudy. Now, he's a good guy, but the reason he's a good guy is he's a Hungarian immigrant who wants to meet a real pretty Australian. She doesn't have to be that intelligent. She doesn't have to be that all this book learning, which features from time to time in the movie. Lisa also wants a dress. Now, the dress features a great deal in the movie. It's 150 guineas. Gradually, does it get marked down, and does she have good fortune? Indeed, does she meet someone who's also a new Australian and have a bit of luck? And also, does she get to university? It's her father's the problem.
No child of mine's going to university, Richard, said in a wonderful Australian Vogue, I thought. Sad that Natasha Wanton can't join us. Still, maybe that's something to do with the clock times.
Oh, it might be indeed. And I have to say that Mr. Miles, played by Shane Jacobson, he doesn't approve. You're quite right. He doesn't approve of university. Only thing is that when she gets good results, all his mates think it's marvellous, and they're really intrigued, and they want
to be precise. Good eye, mates. Did really well.
That's right, Alex. I'm impressed by your accent. I think you should adopt it permanently.
It's Sarah Huntley who basically told me the importance of the upward inflection whilst doing the Australian accent, because you have to finish off everything with as though it were a question. Isn't that right, Sarah?
Absolutely is. I'll give it a whirl, Pearl. It's a bit of a killer diller. But Alex, you've given us about four different accents so far. But do go on, Fitzwilliams. We need to know the upshot of what you think.
Yes, it's truly thrilling. Mrs. Miles, played by Susie Porter, is very upset by her daughter, Lisa, because Lisa, you see, is Leslie. And if you christen someone Leslie and then they call themselves Lisa, I think that's deeply upsetting. I won't try any accents. No.
You're sounding like Barry Humphries now.
There are a couple of characters who inhabit the storm. Noni Hazelhurst is a very amiable turn as the boss of the department. Miss Cartwright and Nicholas Hammond as the porter, Mr. Ryder. It has to be said that this movie, I mean, it has to be fair. Are the cast good? They do what the roles require, and it's got the appropriate period sense. I mean, I don't know. I didn't happen to see Selfridges, which was a television series, but it's this sort of thing set in the 1950s. But the important thing, and the reason the movie's, I think, done so well, it's all very well slating it and saying that there should have been a murder in it, and that would have livened it up for me.
I never said there should have been a murder in it. I did say it was very similar to Are You Being Served, but a more serious version with Mrs. Slocum.
Yes, Mrs. Slocum, we remember with great fondness, and it's precisely what it is, and the cliched characters are what they are. But anybody going to see it would have known perfectly well or had a pretty good idea what they were going to see, and it's very soft soap with a period. That's fine. I mean, it's a movie that pleases the clientele. And I have to say at the moment, by the way, and this is a serious point, I was looking for films to see for next week. My good Lord.
Kong versus Godzilla, Richard.
I didn't feel quite in the mood for that. And there wasn't much else, quite honestly, that hadn't been on for quite a long time. I appreciate
what's King Kong done to ever offend you, Richard? And indeed, Godzilla in general, for goodness sakes.
So let's be honest, the ladies in black, you can't mark it down terribly because it delivers the precise. I mean, Bruce Beresford did Break of a Rant, set in the Boer War. It's superb. He'd also did Driving Miss Daisy, which was a very predictable movie.
Took Jessica 20 years for him to get this one made, Richard. 20 years after he bought the original book rights. It was a labour of love.
That's a riveting fact, Alex, and it went influence my marks for it, which are based not on what I thought of it so much, but those who, you know, those who go and see it will enjoy it. And well, I mean, Andrew Rice and Rachel Taylor, and all, they do the roles perfectly well. The roles demand nothing. But that's not the point. The point is it's what it is. And from that point of view, well, 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10. I mean, it's a perfectly harmless a bit of fun and games, and honestly, truly, madly, deeply, let's have another movie which is more serious, which is what we're coming to.
Fear. you've seen Ladies in Black. You know that I scored it at 7.5, would have scored it higher, basically, had it not been for the child vomiting. But there we are. So, Fia, what was your score for this particular number, which I thought was quite heart-rending and charming in moments of the whole thing?
Well, I also thought it was quite charming, and I think I would also give it a 7. But one thing that I mean, this film, it could have been a TV show, because though there were so many storylines, so many interesting characters, and there was so much potential, and it's, I think they could have done more. That's just my one point. I was like, oh, I really like this movie, but I want to know more about him and more about her, and I just want to see them evolve, because I just want to know more. And I also feel like I don't have a lot of knowledge about Australia in the 60s, but just like with the immigrants and how they were with the Australians.
The refos.
And I just want to know more about how that was like back then. Oh. I just want a TV show out of this.
Yeah. I do have to make the point, though, that I couldn't stop inwardly laughing about the way the new Australians, the refers or whatever they're called, are all bookish, all learned, all so
but absolute. Richard, most refugees are. That's why we send them to Rwanda. Sarah, from your own perspective.
Well, I agree with Thea. I've seen this, and it's, as you say, it does what it says on the box, really. The most interesting thing for me was actually, like Thea is explaining, the history of what it was like for someone immigrating at that time to Australia, and also what big department stores at that time were like. I find that as fascinating as the storyline. And I also agree with Fitzwilliams. I think sometimes you just think, they've ticked the box on that topic. They've ticked the box on that, which probably led from an acting point of view to it being a bit one level, because you didn't get to know the inner workings of the characters so much. It was more, this is what we're showing here. But I enjoyed it. And I watched the whole thing. So I'd agree with the guys. I'd say 7. That's what I go with.
Clearly, you're actually looking at the cliched views of the way in which Magda is portrayed, being from Eastern European, as obviously having a vampire heritage, etc. So, Anna Koshkinel, from your point of view, having seen the trailer on this perspective, would you say this is an outrageous slur on all kind of Eastern European folk or Middle European individuals?
I hope the background noises aren't too loud. So I can help with the Eastern European accent if you need when you're doing the Australian one. But hearing you all talk about the movie, I'm quite sad that I chose to watch the other one, not this one, because it seems like it's a nice idealization of foreigners going to a new country and making a living. And it's everything, the cast looks really sweet and lovely, and everything is sunny and full of life. So yes,
you suffered the occupant, much as I did myself, really, which sadly sort of spiraled way down to the sort of sixth scenario, because let's face it, if you lose your job, it's tough. But if you then actually go on to become a psychotic individual who decides to actually act as a cuckoo in the nest, etc., it's not a good sign at all in any way, shape or form, and let alone what happens to the poor little car that for no fault of its own was basically rammed into a complete concrete post. Frankly, I was just appalled. This is not a good Easter movie, Richard.
Well, Alex, no, indeed it isn't. It's a Spanish thriller directed and written by David and Alex Pastor, who are brothers. And however, Javier Menez, played by Javier Gutierrez, he's a former advertising executive. He was once pretty big. Now he can't find a job.
He's just a small man, Richard. That's the whole challenge.
Yes, well, he was once rather big, but when there's a scene, and this is actually, I found very funny, when he applies to an intern's post and he doesn't realise that the fact he's been accepted, he suddenly discovers that he's not going to be paid. I don't believe somebody who was once tops in his job would fall for that one. But equally, we realize that he has to downsize, and he lives in a poorer part of Barcelona with his wife Marga, played by Ruth Diaz, and son. Well, The problem is he resents it. At least I'm assuming that this is the reason. There's a problem in this movie. Firstly, the last first half hour drags, it really does. And secondly, also, it's very dark. And I do get a little impatient with that, or felt I was. But nonetheless...
And the obese son is threatened mercilessly, I felt, you know, mercilessly.
Well, I have to say that we have to bear in mind that when you leave an apartment, it's always wise to keep a key to that apartment, because should you wish to get back, you can get back at any time. And, well, tenants move in there and he becomes obsessed with them. Now, why does he behave as he does? Because the movie's come on for quite a lot of stick, because the reasons for it, you could say that it's capitalism, the dog-eats-dog aspect of it. You could say the green-eyed monster of jealousy, or a mixture of motives. I did find the movie picked up quite, it became quite lively. I did say that the Ladies in Black, which, as we all agree, I think is a pretty charming, rather superficial, but a bit of fun, and fun that will, you know, that the main thing is it'll please people who want to see that sort of thing. This one is somewhat unusual, because the violence that I joked we could have found in the last one, you certainly get plenty of it here. Into the flat, which he used to occupy, comes high flyer Thomas, played by Mario Casas, his wife Lara, played by Bruna Cusi, and daughter Monica, played by Iris Vallis. So, now Thomas, he's doing very well, but he has a drink problem. And the problem is also he's got an enemy. An enemy he doesn't realize, because there are various ways that Javier believes that he can, well, upset the couple, putting it mildly. He's going to stage, I mean, and Alex naturally expects sympathy for the poor car that is crashed and who's responsible.
Well, I had more sympathy for the car than I had for the gardener, shall we say, in his strange habit.
No, but the gardener was, as to get back into a place you used to inhabit, well, you get known by the staff. Now, he's always prowling around there. And the gardener decides that, you know, he spots what's going on. The trouble is the gardener has very, very strange tastes. Extremely strange, we will say. And he pays dearly for
us, one might say, Richard.
One might indeed. One also might say that Javier has, he intends to, if he possibly can, destroy Thomas. And why does he do this? As I say, it is a bit of a question mark as to precisely his deep, deep resentment of the way he's been treated, the fact he's done.
Because Thomas is a success because he's working for his father-in-law.
Well, yes, and that doesn't help the marriage, because the problem is that Thomas and Lara rather resent each other. And the facts are that, well, if you've got someone prowling around in your department some of the time, someone also who's, realizes you've got a drink problem and your wife is terrified you might go back at it, and someone who's perfectly prepared to crash a car and also do the ambiguities of behaviour, shall we say, dealing with emails and so forth, which can be produced at important moments, all of this stacks the odds against you. And the problem is that, well, Abby is pretty good at being extremely nasty. The banality of evil is probably the message here. There is an extremely good central performance, I thought, by Javier Gutierrez, because this holds a movie that isn't really that impressive, because it takes a long time to get to the ground, holds it up. And I got quite intrigued by it, because I was wondering what was going to happen next. And we had gardeners and resentful spouses and all of this, and also someone who's as down on his luck as he is. And the matter of pepper spray being awfully important and peanut allergies and so forth, it's one of those movies that I'm not saying it stays with me terribly long, but I was rather intrigued, especially by the second half of it. Incidentally, Alex, I noticed you have a cross behind you. I take it that is celebratory.
Because of the triumph over evil, Richard. That's the whole symbol of Easter, basically. So I feel it's very important to get that message across for this particular sad movie.
But I think this movie, I cannot give away how it ends. But
it doesn't end well, Richard, is all I can say. It's not a happy ending.
Alex, no. It depends on your point of view, you see. So I would simply say that it's
not good for the first wife, or arguably for the second wife either.
Well, I'd say it's a respectable 6 to 7 out of 10, because I was staying with it, which I needed willpower to do, I found it rather intriguing. So,
personally, Richard, I would have actually gone on to watch The Greatest Story Ever Told, all 3 hours, 8 minutes of it, much better, and a positive ending.
As a matter of fact, Alex, since you mentioned that absolutely abominable, abysmal load of trivial nonsense which George Stevens produced in the mid-1960s, that killed off the period epic for something like 35 or 36 years.
Well, that's not the point, Richard. It still has David McCallum in it, and Martin Landau, and Max von Sydow.
Yes, Max von Sydow did his best as Christ, but John Wayne as a centurion of the cross, I put it to you, Charlton Heston.
It's a classic, with a good intermission. Anna, as you suffered the endurance test that was, of course, the occupant, what are your thoughts?
I think it's a very disturbing movie. I think the ending was unexpected in terms of normal people do not expect that to happen. And I think, I don't think it's too much aggression, but I think it's the way they envision it and they put it into play that makes it too much. And I think altogether I should have chosen the other movie, because there was that certain scene when he started having blood dripping out of his mouth and he started smiling and he had those eyes that were totally lost, that got to me. And I was like, yeah, okay, I need a break. So, yes, no. And I like that it was in Spanish. I like Spanish movies. I like the language, but this is not my type of movie. It clearly not after cocaine verse.
Fia, your thoughts?
Well, I'm only halfway through the film, and now that
all
I'm
the
here,
worst bits are yet to come.
I'm just very confused because, like Richard said, the first really drags on. So that was kind of my whole expectation for the entire film. But now I'm just like, what is happening with the gardener and blood in his mouth? What?
After the first hour, it all goes down. After the first hour, no. Everything changes. Specifically after 57 minutes.
Yes, it does. Don't be put off by Alex. I would suggest that because of the radical change we all agree occurs, it would be worth seeing just to get your point of view on the whole movie.
Sarah Huntley, is this one which you think, yes, that sounds like one for the entire family to sit down on? I'm sure Imogen and John would be delighted by this one.
Well, I'm not sure they would, really. I mean, we've all got very individual tastes. From me personally,
the gymnast is pretty good, to be fair.
Oh, really? Well, I'm not into too much violence at the moment. I need to watch things that make me feel calm and content and happy. And I could do a bit of violence if it ends up with a good feeling at the end.
No,
but
very, definitely doesn't.
I would put it to you, Alex, it very much depends on your point of view. And I would also add that I thought Javier Gutierrez gave a very good performance in the central role.
Just needs to find a different job and just care about his family and just earn money and just get a house and just act normal.
I can't give away what happens, but I'm not sure that he does that.
Well, he does get a different job. It's just a job that basically used to be occupied by the former husband. Anyway, Sarah.
I actually think
It would be a no for me, because I watched something that had violence that was funny and a bit strange, but I found interesting, which was Bad Sisters. But the violence in that, you hated the chap so much that you were kind of enjoying it. So I'd go for the other one. I'm really interested to see what the score is. I reckon it's going to be about a 7-2, but not for me at the moment.
It's a 5.5 to a 6 for me, I have to say. Richard's probably going to go for something a lot higher.
I'll go to 7 because of the way it ended. If I had to score it midterm, I it would have been lower. Much yes.
Anna is duly shocked at that. What would your score have been, Anna?
Five at best, if I'm in a good mood.
Yeah, five at the best. And thank the Lord she actually had Star Trek second season episode The Apple to actually work through, which is much better from that point of view. At least has a fairly interesting ending.
I feel like Javier did a really good job. He was an amazing actor, but the plot in itself, it was just disturbing from beginning to end. And just imagine if all of us would act like this, if we would lose our jobs. Just imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I did think, imagine it's quite intriguing, having been in PR, which I've done for years because I promoted international Who's Who and then numerous art galleries working for artists and that sort of thing. But as I say, it's not likely. Because I thought found the scene very, very funny, what I mentioned, where he actually is employed as an intern without pay. I didn't realize this was the case. I mean, obviously, you set up someone deeply resentful, and then they take their revenge on, well, off, sometimes
he doesn't even get his car parking ticket validated without the help and assistance of the interviewer, or at least one of the interviewers who's vaguely sympathetic to this ancient, haggard individual who once might have produced some 30-second garbage for people to actually buy things from on television.
Commercial. He was extremely successful in the commercial world, producing commercials, and there's no doubt at all that that was part and parcel of the character's baggage. And then he gets a little sidetracked, shall we
say.
That
didn't impact Ridley Scott on his career change. He was also quite successful as a commercial maker as well, back in the day.
Well, Ridley Scott has been knighted twice, Alex, so there it is. Napoleon was, it's very funny, actually. Apparently, we didn't get the result of the votes for the worst film of last year. But the rumor...
There was Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, who swept the board with the Razzles. Indeed, I was surprised, Richard, you didn't have Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2 lined up, because the sequel is actually already released. So that's another one you can put together with Kong versus Godzilla. Sarah, I would recommend Airplane if you want a hilariously laugh-out-loud movie. Go back to the original series with Robert Hayes and check out Airplane. You'll find that most amusing. Wherever she happens to be. Because I think she's freezing somewhere on her road to wherever. We haven't found out exactly where Sarah's going, but she's in a wonderful freeze frame position now, which the radio listener can only kind of imagine from their point of view. Where are you heading, Sarah?
I'm in Cornwall, and I'm heading to Polzeath to meet some friends in Polzeath. I've been in the sea this morning for 5 to 10 minutes, and the happy Easter, everybody. Sorry about the background noise.
There you are. So that pretty much wraps up the whole sequence. Anna Koshkinel, Fia van den Bogert, Sarah Huntley, and of course Richard Fitzwilliams. The line, sounding with Aunt Natasha Wanton, because it would have been fascinating to hear what she made of that Australian connection, given that she's in essence a European soul who has kind of migrated to Australia and technically will be not quite a refo, but a kind of emo or whatever. Anyway, we might find out about that next time. As ever, keep watching those movies.
world. Sound of everyone, save a siren sound. Come Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA. Our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate, keep on keeping up, keep on keeping up, keep on keeping up, keep on keeping up, save Siren Radio.